UPS is currently hiring package handlers for its preload operation. Earn $13 an hour and receive up to $250 in weekly attendance bonuses while working up to a career as a package car driver. In as little as 6 months, you could have an opportunity to connect with customers and build lasting relationships in the community. Future you looks good in brown. Apply now at upsjobs.com or text brown to 33588. That's brown to 33588.
You've got ants inside the house, mosquitoes outside the house, moles burrowing in your lawn, and termites eating your house from inside out. You're completely surrounded! Luckily, OPC Pest Services has a Four Seasons program that can help. OPC has been providing quality pest services since 1972. Protect your home and property and call OPC Pest Services for a free estimate at 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com. Again, that's 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com.
We kept saying it and saying it just to be ready, and then when the time came, it didn't happen. Not really, but I mean, I'll see more today during practice. Like, we talked a little bit about it yesterday, but won't know until game time. It's a game time decision. You got to see how guys prepare themselves, lean up.
This is Malik Williams, by the way.
I think a lot of guys were hurt. Just head down, know that we should have got that game, but I feel like in the moment it was hurting for everybody and just mind bothersome, but I feel like we're at the next play now. Next game, we know that it's behind us, trying to go win 10 more now.
How's the practice like today, coming off a loss, different from a practice like maybe Monday, where you were already
playing on the street? No, it can be. Coaches might be a little more on us, but that's about it. Like, we got to have the same mindset. Yesterday, I feel like the team came in with energy. We had a good practice yesterday, so it's about putting it in the past.
The previous Clemson game, you did have a good start, a great first half. Can you look back at that, find any keys to home in on and do the same thing?
I know on the defensive end, we were very locked in. Last game, we preached to not give up no seven cuts and make sure that we had the box covered and ball screen coverage, and I feel like we did a really good job with that. Looking back, Darius also did a really great job to start that game. Can't remember how much he finished with, but I know that he really got us going on the offensive end in that game. And then we were just locked in on the defensive end, so that was really what helped us get going in that game.
He really did a good job on the Sims, and he's pretty versatile inside out passing, et cetera. What's the challenge of defending him?
Being ready to do things that me and Steve don't normally guard. Like, he likes to keep some handoffs. They do some weave actions for him where he catches it and wants to attack us immediately. So just doing things that we aren't used to. And then knowing that he's versatile, he can knock down shots. He's good in the post. Just coming out and battling him for 40 minutes will help us. I feel like it's more want at times, especially when we're coming out the half down, a closer lead than we expected. Then that's when I feel like the want comes out a little bit more than to start the games. I feel like at the start of games, we were a little comfortable, lackadaisical, and just not giving it our all like we should be.
As a team leader, what have you done or what do you feel like you should do?
I feel like I just got to continue to try to stay on guys. I mean, it's hard for me as well because, I mean, I'm out there and it's my job to make sure that everybody is ready. And I feel like I've been letting us down while doing that. So it's something that I'm trying to find out what exactly I need to do for us to get to that level. I think that Jordan did make strides from last year to this year. It's nothing that he's really told me. Not really.
He was one of the more vocal guys when things aren't going well. Is that a role that you embrace? Do you feel like that's your responsibility as a captain?
I don't think that it's my responsibility, really. I feel like captain label or no label, any guy on our team should say something when they see something. And that's just what I do. Like, I feel like when it gets quiet and we get down on ourselves, I need to say some words to pick us up. it's not always about bad things. It's good things as well. Like, you got to approach all of that and approach it with the same mindset. Like, we got to get better or we're doing great at so-and-so. So it's just about telling the guys when we're doing good and bad, just so that they don't got to hear from the coaches all the time. Typically, yeah.
Do you think the communication in this team is where it needs to be right now? Do you think you all are talking enough on the court?
No, not at all. I think that we do a good job of communicating the things that have to be communicated, like when you're going into a ball screen or like when it's like a down screen and you're telling somebody to get through. I think we do a good job with those things, but it's that extra communication when you're not involved in the play and you're telling your guy that you got his back and I'm over here, send him my way, send him my way. Those little things like that is that next.
Right track and not fall behind.
Yeah, and I think that would have been anybody who we had to come play next. You don't want to lose two in a row ever. So it's just about putting that one behind us and going into the next play, knowing that we're still in the lead for conference as of now. So just about getting that next win and remaining where we are.
Anything else? Great.
Thank you.
All right, that was Samuel Williamson at the press conference. We'll get you Mac in a few minutes here. Right now we got Mike Pratt in studio. Mike?
Process, thank you. That was a little pre-game Clemson versus U of L. A little presser going on, as usual.
And then we'll have Marcus Maben in here in a few minutes, of course.
We'll have Marcus to talk about his guys, the U of L Cardinals.
Of course.
And we're going to go back to Samuel?
No, that was Samuel. Okay. We'll go to Mac in a few minutes, once Mac gets up here.
Coach Mack, a little late today, probably had that scouting report
maybe
in his back pocket working on it still.
We also got
coaches spend a lot of time on that stuff, man. They and rightly so. So, get Coach Mack like to hear what he's got to say. Tough game coming up with Clemson.
I'm intrigued. I want to see if these guys can bounce back, you know, like they did with Florida State, you know, see what they can, if they can go in and make something of this and be like, it's just a bump in the road.
Yeah, I think this time of year, that's what how you have to approach it. Can't worry about the last ball game. I mean, you got to get better. You got to get better all year long. But this time of the year, you certainly can't let a loss affect you because time is getting short. Upcoming tournaments, you need to really stay positive and work through the bumps in the road, as you say.
I mean, it's like it's good to have a bump in the road at least like a month out. That way now you could like start to rebuild your momentum and get a little bit hot going into the tournament. Like if you would have had it right before, had a clunker like that, it could have derailed you completely. So a month out, not too bad. Just go on the run now. Just go on your championship run now if you want to do it.
I think that anytime you get inside of a month before the tournaments, I think you can absorb a loss, maybe two. I mean, Michigan State is historically really good at that. They'll struggle at the end of the year, and then all of a sudden, boom, they make a run in the NCAA. And it's really it's how you handle those losses late. You get those losses early, and people sometimes put too much into those early losses, messes up players mentally. But down the stretch, man, they've got to stay focused, tuned in, and not let a loss bother them because you've got – an opportunity coming up to rectify that very, very quickly versus if you lose in December, you go like, what can I do to make this up? You put a little bit more pressure on yourselves. Now you're just playing for the next day.
Right. And I think Chris Mack is also in a way out to prove something because of how things got derailed last year at the very end. He started losing a lot of games and they stumbled into the tournament. They lost first game. That's it. So they're looking – Mack's looking for his first tournament win with U of L. And he's looking to go on at least some sort of run, you know, at the end of the season to say, hey, this is us, and we're going to get a 2 or 3 seed.
Yeah, and last year they struggled down the stretch. They're all veterans this year. They should be able to avoid that. They should be able to say, been there, done that, and then move right through it into the next part. Conference tournaments, that's what they're for. I mean, back in the day they didn't have but a few conference tournaments, but now – with all conference tournaments, you have a chance to make up for losses in the last month or two with conference tournaments. And that's what they're for teams that are either on the bubble or teams that are trying to get hot.
Right. Exactly right.
So, and we've got Marcus Maben stepping in here with us. The old scoring machine himself.
I had no idea you were live. I thought we were taking the press conference. So sorry for my tardiness.
We were taking it. We're going to come back. Coach Mack's coming to the podium shortly here. We had Sam Williamson. And let me. What do you think of that big fella? Is he making strides? I mean, he looks like a basketball player, and he struggled a little bit. I mean, he really does. Tall, lean, long-armed.
I like, again, he definitely looks the part. You're starting to see his shoulders sitting back a little more. He's stepping
shoulders into, sitting back? Confidence?
Working out. Starting to get, you know, that conditioning body where it almost looks like their lungs are getting bigger.
You puff out.
Yeah. I'm noticing the little things like that. He seems like one of the guys that's really, really focused. You know how you can kind of identify guys who do lose focus and don't lose focus?
Sure.
One other thing I liked the other day, David Johnson kind of hits him with a hard pass, a very difficult catch, but to see his response as my bad, you know, if I get two hands on it, I should catch it, even if it's a tough pass. I did like him taking accountability for that one because a lot of times, especially McDonald's All-Americans can easily say,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, hey.
It's your fault.
Yeah.
What are you doing to me?
Right. I need it on the left side instead of the right side so I can continue to finish it, you know, help me look good. So, you know, if we're talking little things, I like his accountability on the floor.
Well, we were talking about where we go with a month to go, and you played with conference tournaments, and you've had teams that struggled down the stretch and blew up in the NCAA tournament or the conference tournament really came to life. And I don't know, everybody's different, but what is it? I've got to ask you, what is it, and this blows my mind sometimes, about passing with these kids in this day and age? You talk about, you know, a little bit left, a little bit right, and then they – they don't know how to seal the man guarding them, whether they're a smaller player or a bigger player. So where do you pass the ball? I watch games. Marcus, I watch games sometimes. Why did he throw it to that side?
Now, I mean,
I got your attention.
No, absolutely. I mean, you knew the perfect questions to ask me, and you being who you are, you and I would never need show notes if you're going to ask questions about generational perspectives on the simple things of basketball. Could you imagine watching basketball through my eyes, being a former Denny Crum player, watching the extinction of the backboard? Players play like the backboard doesn't even exist anymore.
Oh, that's sad.
Right?
That's sad, yeah.
You know, and so to notice somebody using the glass and getting excited is a travesty, right? So when you say passing, like when there should be maybe one problem about maybe the timing of the pass, you and I both see you're not sealing your man. You're not passing with two hands. You're not setting up your man before you even pop out to get the pass. But it all goes back to the lack of urgency and ball security from the AAU culture. And I knew 5 minutes with you was going to turn me into get everybody off my lawn, get all these kids off my lawn. Basketball, what are you doing to my beloved sport? You know, by simple things like not valuing the basketball because there's 8 AAU games in one day.
And you played for one of the great coaches of all time in Denny Crum. And
the greatest.
Okay. I mean, listen, I'm a big Denny fan. He's a friend. I have no problem with that at all. And he played for Coach Wooden,
right?
Another one that's terrific. And
that's my bloodline.
That's your bloodline. And rightly so, that should help you to understand where it was and where it is now.
Yes.
And the game has changed. They're bigger, stronger, faster, quicker.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're all of that. But they don't pay attention to detail as they did back in the day. Mm-hmm. I mean, back to you or further back to me. They don't pay attention to the details as much.
Let me ask you a question. Is it the kid that doesn't pay attention to the detail, or is it the coach that doesn't focus on the fundamental at the younger age? Because it's more important about getting a guy to travel from, you know, Lexington to Hopkinsville, Kentucky to play on my AAU team. It's almost like getting the players is more important now than developing the ones you have. So how much, like, where do you, you know, find the green zone of these younger coaches are more concerned about getting the guy who already has the personal trainer, and he works out on with his personal trainer, and then he comes down to my city. You know, when you talk about guys who play together, and then you're like, those guys are from two different parts of the state. How in the world did they play AAU together? And then you say, there's no time to even do fundamental practices when you're flying a kid in for 2 days of AAU practice before we go to Vegas. You know, so like, would you say that's more on the coaches or more on the kids? Like, how, you know, where would you rate that?
Well, I think in listening to coaches, and you listen to them, I think that with the rules structured as they are, the 2 hours, 2 hours a day and so many hours a week and got to give them a day off and all those particulars that most people don't know, I think coaches look at that situation and say, you know, I've got to get the best player I can get, first of all. Then I got to get the best player I can get with skills, fundamental skills. We got Chris Mack up. We'll take this back after Chris Mack.
I don't remember.
So what kind of lessons can you take from a game like Wednesday? They're out for one Saturday.
That we have to be better.
Did that come down to kind of the first war at the start of the game?
It didn't help. I mean, we obviously got off to a terrible start and never really recovered. We were playing catch up the entire game. The same as it was when I said that there would probably be some changes.
You don't want to say what you're considering?
No.
Last time you played Clemson, you all looked like a pretty complete team. What was working for you that day?
We did a good job on Sims, who's a very challenging matchup. You know, he's a guy that is more of a guard that plays a center position, so it draws Malik and Steve out on the floor. He's a great passer. He's shooting it at a high level from three, so it draws your center out even more. And they run some really good actions. You know, they missed several three-point shots that I don't want to say were wide open, but behind handoffs and just actions that you know, it's a little bit tricky. They shot the ball better in the last 8-10 minutes of the game and started to narrow the gap. So we have to do a better job, you know, with handoffs and things of that nature that are sort of preempted by the five-man.
Is practice any different on a day like this than we've done earlier this week? We were, you know, riding on
the track. No, the length is about the same. I think that the intensity is usually really high in all of our practices. I'm sure that the urgency, hopefully, our players feel and our coaching staff feels is maybe a little different. But, you know, we practice to win and we practice with the mindset of competing every single day. I think that's one. You know, you could script some of the things that you want to, you know, run offensively. You know, I know football teams do that. Some basketball teams do it. These are going to be the first three or four plays. But generally, I think the tone is set on by your defense. And so you can't necessarily script that because, you know, you're going against whatever the other team's running. And, you know, we just we have to have guys on the floor that are ready to go. And the defense keeps us in the game. Or keeps us in that four-minute segment regardless of how our offense is going. And I think when you go on the road, you have to do a great job of taking care of the ball early and get a shot. And we haven't been great at that, and that's something that we're trying to address and improve. Yeah, I mean, we talk about it, Tim. I mean, I don't know other than doing it, and like you talked about lineup changes, I mean, like, you know, believe me, we don't just sort of roll into the next game and you know, not having addressed it, and it does have to change, that's for sure.
Have you ever scripted offensively?
Not that many plays. We'll script a couple.
The poor shooting, do you just one of those nights, or do you attribute it to other factors?
We missed a lot of open looks that our team's made all year. I don't know if game pressure affected it, but you know, the looks that we generated, whether it was in transition or whether it was in the half court, primarily were from guys that we wanted shooting the ball, and were open looks. And, you know, we're a team that usually knocks in a few more than we did. And so we're going to continue to take those shots. Three-point shooting didn't cost us the game, though. I mean, we still had a chance to win. Regardless of how abysmal we shot the ball, I don't think we'll shoot it that poorly in any other game. But if we do, we have to figure out a way to win the game around that or despite that. That's a funny question. I mean, when you're a competitor, you don't want to lose. So I'm sure you feel it a little bit more when you lose. And so, you know, maybe that teaches us all. I don't know, but I've lost enough of my life that I know that I don't like to.
What did you see out in the Warren Enoch in that game that kept them from playing their usual?
You know, Jordan just, he didn't play well. You know, I thought he was lethargic, was not in a stance defensively. You know, I thought Steve, you know, struggled ball screen defense a few times and finishing a few times. But, you know, Malik has generally been such a great defender for us. And with Alvarado and DeVoe and what they do with ball screens, you know, you want your best guy out there. And in that particular case, Malik is our best guy. And so, you know, sometimes in certain situations, you know, like we were going down the stretch to Steve against Virginia, he is by far our best guy at scoring the ball inside, which is what we, you know, utilized him for. And at times we played both of those guys together against Georgia Tech. So, you know, really depends on the situation.
Yes, Steve got his fourth foul, and so you couldn't maybe play them together as long as you might have liked. But when they were on the floor together, how did you think that went?
Defensively, we were good. You know, offensively, we still couldn't score. But we couldn't score with whoever we had on the floor for the most part of the game. So it does make it a little bit challenging. They can muddy the lane up a little bit more. Our size certainly presents some problems when we have those two together, but the spacing becomes a little bit of an issue as well. It's sort of, you know, pick your poison a little bit. Like, how do you want to play? Are we going to be more defensive minded or maybe a little less offensive minded, but a better, much better rebounding team?
How much as you depend on Jordan, can you tolerate
lethargy? No. No, I mean, that's why he didn't play as many minutes as he usually does in key stretches. You know, I want to hold each of our guys to a really, really high standard, and Jordan knows that.
What do you think about this whole season with Jordan? And over the years, you all talk about things he can improve on this season, and you feel like he has improved?
He has. He has improved greatly. He's improved so much from when we first coached him and from last year. You know, the decisions that he made on offense last year were bad. I mean, he'd have games where he'd have multiple turnovers, that he would do ridiculous stuff, dribbling behind his back in ball screen situations, you know, traveling on closeouts, you know, and he forced a lot of shots last year, a lot of shots last year. And I think he's become way more efficient offensively. I mean, he took six shots against Georgia Tech, six. And, you know, he gets maligned at times for not being a guy that delivers. I mean, you talk about a guy that's gone from last year, you know, out of the team element at times, taking, you know, wild shots. He's really, really try to do the things that help his team win and be more efficient. Defensively, from last year to this year, it's night and day. It's night and day. He's guarded the ball as well as anybody on our team, whether that's a four-man or a two-guard. But he did not compete the other night. He was bad. And I do not want to have bad Jordan Wara. And he knows that. He knows that. And he wasn't the only one. And again, I give great credit to Georgia Tech. I thought their guys played really hard, but he wasn't the only one that didn't show up, so to speak. Well, Ryan's a very, very smart player, but, you know, he does lack in size and athleticism. You know, when we were in man, he got beat. He got beat baseline. They just missed an easy layup. He got rejected right down the lane for a layup. You know, that's what prevents him from being on the floor at times. Got to be stronger with the ball. You know, I don't think Ryan's going to have nights where he goes 1-for-8 from three, but you know, and I do think the next one that he shoots is going in. So it's our job to figure out ways to get him looks, and he's got to be better than he was against Georgia Tech on the defensive end.
Is there a common thread in David's turnovers?
I wouldn't say everyone. You know, I thought against Georgia Tech he had some careless ones where the ball just sort of got knocked off his thigh and out of bounds. He's got to be ball strong. He's got to know that a lot of times, because of his size, the only advantage guards have is to try to reach and slap low. So he's got to be able to have great ball placement on his drives. I think some of Dave's turnovers, and this maybe wasn't the case against Georgia Tech, but he's in search of a play every time he, you know, touches the ball. And as much of it as a playmaker as he is, you know, you have to wave the white flag on certain possessions and say, hey, really good job defensively. Let's move it to the next guy. And at times he's, you know, tried to be in search of a play and figure out how can I make this pass and how can I get to the rim when maybe that's not what the situation is called for.
As dynamic a player as he is there a temptation to let him play through some of that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's you know, we just know that usually over time, you know, you gain more experience and you learn you know, not to get burnt, put your hand on the stove, as the old, you know, children's lesson goes, that, you know, we hopefully he learns in those situations, and we're going to keep putting him out there. And the turnovers go down, and the playmaking ability goes up, and the IQ of when to go and when not to becomes greater. The thing with David when I recruited him, and you know, I've missed a lot during my career on guys, is I'd always get the word back from, you know, people that watched him play, or it would be a friend that would talk to my wife who would say to me, and I'd always get this, like, I don't think he's that good a player. He doesn't score that much, and, you know, like, can't shoot. It's like, I always thought he was going to be a good player because he's 6'5". He sees the game like not too many see, and he's willing to make the right play. He wasn't hungry to score, and he still isn't. He just wants to be he wants to make the right play. And then he's got a lot of things that you can't teach, his size, his athleticism, his quickness. So I think I thought he was going to be a pretty good player. They won a state championship, so I don't think they suffered too much. I wish I could have suffered that way in high school. No, I mean, you know, he's very well coached. They ran a great system. He had really good players around him, maybe not a leeway, you know, college-level players, but certainly enough to be the best team in the state of Kentucky his senior year.
Anything else for Coach?
Thanks.
And we're back, ESPN 680, 105.7, Fast Break Friday. Mike Pratt here with Marcus Maben.
I feel like I cheated the public. We cheated the public out of some of the best conversation, the best basketball conversation we could muster up. I should have just put my cell phone on the table, and the rest of the show could have been our talking.
We were talking scouting reports, paying attention. And, you know, Coach Crum was one of the best that ever played the game, and I played for one of the best and was around other guys who were really good coaches, and how they –
Scouting reports put together by Scott Davenport.
Scott Davenport.
So, yeah, yeah. You add in that little nugget, you know. It's like,
back when I played, Scott, he was good at that. and Wade Houston. Okay. We had Dickie Parsons, who was part-time and also baseball coach up there. He had played much earlier than I, but Dickie was good. I mean, this is going to be interesting for some people. To hold a player's attention then or now, you had to be succinct. Mm. You had to be crisp in your delivery. Mm. Okay? And you had to do those things. You couldn't put them to sleep. Now, we had some guys that did some scouting for us back in the day. They'd put you to sleep. I mean, they'd lose you. But the good guys, man, they told you, okay, Marcus, I want you to do this, this, and this against that guy.
Right.
And that's available. And then they'd move on once they covered that so that, you know, your attention, it had to be focused because it was quick.
Let me ask you something in particular. Like, I'm curious. Now, if you don't remember this moment at all, like don't worry because it's a random basketball moment for me in particular. My introduction to really having to believe in analytics, and you're going to understand why I'm saying air quotes analytics, was I can remember when first hearing Coach Pitino at Kentucky explain on an interview or something, and this is long before me at Louisville or anything, I remember him explaining two things. The shortening of his video scouting, I think it was like with Derek Anderson and Ron Mercer. He talked about being able to move the film session from being these long drawn out film sessions to making his film department go 8 minutes, because that's statistically how long you can keep a player's attention to a scout report. I remember that, and I remember around the same time, I was the first time I heard of tracking deflections. So that was when I first heard analytics, like, really meaning something in college basketball. Do you remember when he first started kind of talking about
deflections, you know, right?
And the scouting videos.
That was an East Coast thing. I'm not going to give Pitino credit for inventing that, but mm-hmm. I think I remember high school coaches talking about it back in the 70s and 80s. And it's really important, and now it's become very important and tracked thoroughly.
Right.
But to talk about the length of a scouting tape. When I was with the original Hornets, we had J.R. Reed. We drafted him in the second round. So I'm on the bench, and he's a rookie or third year, one of the two.
Out of Illinois?
Carolina.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, he's a big guy. And he had talent. He just was goofy. And he just wasn't serious, right. You know. But he was talented, big fella. But we were having some issues with him. Matter of fact, here's what it was. He wanted to catch the ball mid-post at – that's what his favorite spot was, mm-hmm. not low post. For some reason, he wanted mid post. Then he wanted to drop step out and face and play from there.
Right.
And we're going like Gene Littles is the head coach, Tom Nasselke is assistant. We're going like, hey, Jay, you quick enough, man, you're going to get some points inside at the block. Just set up down there. Well, I don't want to. We go, Jay, it's really important. So we go round and round for about 2 weeks, and that's like six games. You know how that is in the pros. So finally Gene says to me, he says, our tape guy, Fletcher said, have Fletcher make you up a tape on JR, what we see other big guys doing and what he's doing, and we're going to try to show him what Akeem did.
Yep.
Okay, what Akeem did. And I said, okay. I said, how long do you want it, Gene? He says, well, probably not more than about 2.5 minutes. And I said, that's great. We'll do it. So Fletcher puts it together. Nice package.
Right.
2.5 minutes. I go in this room before the game with him. I said, Jay, come in here. I need to talk to you. So we go in a little room there next to the locker room, and I showed this to him. And I knew he wasn't happy.
Right.
I knew he wasn't happy because, you know, he's in the pros now. He knows it all.
Yep.
And it was just quick. It was 2 minutes to show different guys doing different things than showing him what he did and trying to marry those two to where we want to get him.
Right.
So he leaves there, and I had a young fellow was like a locker room guy watch the door for me. I didn't want anybody coming in during this. I just wanted Jay and I. And he came back in. He said, Coach, can I take the tape machine for you back to the lot? I said, yeah, sure. He says, how'd it go? I go, well, I thought it went pretty good. And he looks at me. He says, I don't think it went very good, Coach. And I said, what do you mean? He said he was cussing on the way out. Once he got out of the room, he was cussing. He thought it was a waste of time. And he had played for Dean Smith, and he didn't need to do that. But those things, I think, could be very productive if a guy pays attention.
Mm.
And it's like the other night, I think it was the Louisville game, they inbounds the ball after a made foul shot, and they let the ball roll I think it was Georgia Tech let Louisville roll the ball to midcourt. The clock, you know, you got to go up. And we were talking earlier about the turn drills when you guys did with your full court.
Yep.
You learned how to turn a dribbler. It takes up time. It gives you opportunities to make steals. And they rolled the ball to midcourt. I think Louisville did.
Cardinals Fresh Kimball did.
Mm-hmm. You know, what you got to do is you don't have to foul him, but get up on him and make him dribble, put it on the floor. The clock's running because at the end of the game, I've said it many times, one way or the other, you're only playing the clock, okay? If you're up on me by four and I got the ball,
right.
I'm playing the clock with 2 minutes to go. I got to get a good shot. I got to know if I don't, what do I do next?
Mm-hmm.
Stop the clock. Stop the clock if you have to.
I mean, this statement, like Friday should be, we should have some version of get off my lawn Friday. Because every comment or every observation of today's game is going to bring you back to the urgency of and the value of a game, of one single game. At some point, you're going to say, you know, if the basketball was good here, it was important to stay on the court and win, you know. And then we're going to say in AAU, those damn kids they play 10 games in one weekend and you pay your entry fee to the tournament and everybody gets to pay and everybody gets to play all day long. You're going to say like your value to paying attention to the little things is not emphasized because there's so much opportunity. And when we're talking about like playground basketball and inner city versus, you know, just getting to play, the idea that if you're any good now at such a young age, you get adopted by a big money AAU team. So now you're 12 years old. You have a little height on you. You have a personal trainer. You're probably, you know, your parents are or somebody's driving you. The coach is driving you to, you know, three cities over to play with the best AAU team. So where was your, you know, your IQ training in the sport of basketball? You haven't even ran into a coach that can mold you. You're running into personal trainers who are teaching you how to do moves instead of teaching you how to play basketball. You, a game and a clock. You're not even learning in that environment. You're just learning like skill sets.
That's right. I mean, well, we're going to take a break. We'll come right back and talk some more. I got some things I want to talk to you about your playing days. And I'll talk about this Cardinal basketball team in UK when we get back.
I can do that.
Fast Break Fridays, ESPN 680, 105.7.
The V Show with Bob Valvano on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Bobby V.
This is the V Show, Fast Break Friday, and Marcus Maben, Mike Pratt, talking a little basketball. Bobby V, traipsing around the country someplace, getting ready to do a game. Well, he'll be at Clemson, I'm sure.
Are we talking basketball or are we talking life culture here? You know, like, I feel like we're just... over across the table, we're trying to solve all the ilks of our civilization.
Well, you know, you reach out and you try to do that. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. But you got to get up.
But it's worth the fight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to talk a little bit about Kentucky and see what you get your thoughts. You follow basketball. You watch a lot of basketball.
Listen, don't make this awkward. I watch all the Kentucky games. Okay. So don't feel like you have to tap dance around the my detailed knowledge of the team.
But you watch more than that. I know you watch a lot of games on television and because you're a basketball junkie like I am and sports junkie.
100%.
And so what do you make of this team since they played the Cardinals in December and where they are now and where do you think they'll go? Not in the NCAA tournament, but the remaining 7 or 8 games.
Okay, what I'll do to give you a perspective coming in, I'll give you the earlier perspective because that's the important part to answer this question moving forward. I've had to confess on my show around the neighborhood. I've had to.
Uh-oh, this is big now.
Listen, I've had to confess that this year I've enjoyed watching Coach Calipari coached this team more than I've ever, you know what I'm saying? Since probably the Ron Mercer year with the, you know, the ice cream sickle shorts, you know, I'm saying that as far as Kentucky being coached, you know, I enjoyed this year so much because it was Roy Williams who made a statement earlier, talked about either he or Dean Smith, but one of the coaches said, I expect a lot of turnovers early in the season because I'm training them to do everything on the court as fast as possible, get used to executing at lightning speed, you know, so they're going to throw the ball all over the place. I'm not going to get mad about that. Coach Crum always called it errors of omission versus errors of commission. The speed that he has gotten these kids to execute at from the opening of the year, Kentucky fan thinks he has a careless team and they're loose with the ball and things like that. So, of course, I sit back and laugh, and, you know, and I'm saying, uh-oh. You know, as a Louisville fan, I've watched the speed that Kentucky has been executing at, and I'm saying that's the most dangerous part about them because their brains, and it's gonna slow down and catch up, but their bodies are so used to, you know, running at this full speed that when those things kind of zipper and combine, I'm going to be fearful for my life, you know, watching Kentucky play. So when you fast forward that to where they are now, now their bodies are moving at that speed and their minds are starting to catch up with the speed of their bodies. So that, you know, I've been impressed. Again, personnel-wise, like I said, the Whitney transfer, I don't know, you know, how deep, you know, and I mean deep, like actual playing and using that speed, you know, it takes a toll on your body, you know, as well, you know.
Absolutely.
But you know, you say you get into a couple of games where you get some TV timeouts and some, you know, some good breaks here and there, you know, I think the team could really do a lot of damage. And again, it all started with Coach Cal. Again, this is a better Coach Cal than he was 3 years ago. You know, like this is
a learning process. Yeah, yeah. No matter who you are or where you are, you learn.
Right. The you always make the Coach Mack comparison and the criticism. I'm like, he's 50 years old. Like the coaches that he's faced have 15 more years of high level Division I experience. Like, you know how much better you're going to get in 3 years at any job you do. So, to answer your question, you know, I'm starting to see them still executing at that speed, going at that speed, but being comfortable executing at that speed, which is was making them really tough.
Yeah, they've grown a lot this year. And I thought Cal did an excellent job last year he relied on PJ, and PJ delivered. Mm. Reed Travis had limitations athletically, but he battled. He'd scrapped.
And injuries.
Calipari knew what to do. Those two guys get hurt separately down the stretch. It really, really hurt. But Hero came on. Johnson came on. And Higgins hit a wall, but he developed late. You know, a team last year, I thought he brought them along. I thought he milked what talent he had in certain situations. And PJ let Calipari coach him last year.
Right.
Okay. And Reed did too. And Reed's a fifth-year guy. He's a grad transfer. For him to open up and let Cal coach him, I think, says a lot about that young fella because, hey, he'd been at Stanford for fourth year, bright guy, got a degree and all that stuff. Now he's coming in and Cal's treating him just like any other freshman on the team, right? Now, what's the odds of that? That working out for you?
Tough. Let me ask you this, like, kind of from the – you watched the cake being baked, right? Then you watch a guy like Hero in the NBA, right? Now, when you retroactively look at the team, do you say they were coachable almost to a fault when you look at how much potential – you know, that you didn't really, I mean, you saw because you were on a daily basis, but when you see them in the NBA, you're like, oh my God, did they not have the confidence or were they just so coachable that it was program centric?
Oh, I think that the NBA is more of a wide open game than the college game. And yeah, they were very coachable last year. I thought that for the most part, they really listened and they developed. They got a lot better. And I if they don't have injury to Reed Travis and PJ down the stretch, they're in the Final Four. Well, they would have been in the Final Four if they could have made, I mean, a good foul shooting team shoots 57%, 76 on the year, and all they needed was one more against Auburn to get there. And now I thought they were very coachable last year, and I think that what you see is guys go to the pros like PJ. We saw him shoot the three in practice. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't let him go out there. Okay, they kept him top of the right. circle, the elbow down. So now they let him go out there, and it doesn't surprise me at all. He's shooting it with confidence, but I watched him make those in practice or after practice. That's, okay,
that was exactly what I was asking.
But the structure is such. In college, I think at all teams, whether it be Louisville, Kentucky, Duke, Kansas, is totally different than in the pros.
Right, and like I said, my question, was answered also in the Donovan Mitchell way. You know,
yeah,
like
sure.
like you see him sure. in college and he's having his struggles, and then he gets into the wide open NBA format. So yeah, so it wasn't so much player or Kentucky specific. It was kind of player development and open up versus coachable versus open NBA environment.
And I think you see some schools that mid-major or low majors that kind of get away from that as far as buying in, that they try to take advantage of what they have, and they have to because they're not loaded with as much talent as Louisville, Kansas, Kentucky. So I think those mid-majors and low majors sometimes don't have that structure because they have to rely on one or two guys. And that goes back to what I've said. I had this philosophy. Stole it from a high school coach.
Mm-hmm.
Three can carry two. All right, four can carry one. But two can't carry three. Think about that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And right now Kentucky is got four carrying one. If Nick stays out of foul trouble, okay, they got four carrying one. I think to really get them over the hump and make a serious run in the NCAA – they've got to have somebody. Hopefully it's E.J. Montgomery. Step into that fifth spot. And sometimes it's used as a complimentary player. Sometimes it's termed as a complimentary player.
Right.
But he can be better than a complimentary player. He just lacks that consistency. If they get him to fill that spot, then you've got a grad transfer and two freshmen coming off the bench. It kind of fits well if that happens for Kentucky.
Freshmen coming off the bench. I hear the rumor. I hear the nugget Coach Cal throws out there. My Kentucky freshman coming along. His name escapes me at the moment.
Juzang.
No.
No. Brooks?
No. The other freshman.
Maxi.
No. Player of the year, Kentucky.
Oh.
Sorry.
Allen.
Yeah, Dante. Okay. Like I hear the other day, Coach Cal's kind of sneaked that one in here, and of course, from the Louisville side of me, I'm like, okay, you lose the transfer, and now all of a sudden the freshman's stepping up, and I'm kind of like, but is he serious about that? You know, like I don't know how much you can divulge as far as you see it every day. Do you put any stock in that, or is that something?
I think he's trying to keep the kid engaged. He still practices or comes to practice. So there are days when he goes full boat with the team, and other days where he's not, and he wears his brace, like Kenny Payne's son.
Right.
Is still wearing that brace a lot.
Okay.
And I don't think Cal would play him at this point, would be my gut feeling.
Right.
And lose that redshirt opportunity for the young man. He's way behind. Yeah, he's way behind as far as, actually understanding and reacting, okay, positively to what they're trying to do. Mm. I mean, you may know what the coach wants, but you don't know how that fits. You don't know how that goes when you're going full speed, as you said. You're going full speed. People are moving. And you go, well, let me out of here. I'm just going to go back to what I did in high school. No. You got to stay in the system, right? So, kid, he lost all that. He lost all that ability to adapt, to blend, to play with these guys and know how they play. Okay, you mentioned guys you played with. They all knew how you played. You knew how they played. You talked about pressing full court.
Yep.
And when one of your guards, Gaines or whoever it was, got the ball handler to turn his back on you, you were there.
You're right.
Because you knew that from practice what Coach Crum wanted.
Right.
And you had executed
it. At that speed,
speed. Yep. And Gaines had played with you, so you understood each other. You read each other, okay? I think Dante That's I don't know if you can catch that
so,
up.
Yeah, so coaching, keeping him engaged would be your pretty much your best guess.
That would be my guess, and I don't know exactly how that's shaking out. But you know, Cal's always been into keeping the guys engaged if they'll let him.
Right.
You know, as his great line is, "Let me coach you. Please let me coach you." So I know. I think the kid probably, I would guess, take a redshirt.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Be healthy.
Yeah.
Be healthy.
Yeah. That's the obvious, you know, 99% right. But like I said, I was curious to ask you, you know, how much was that tactical, you know, from the kid's point of view? Is that tactical to motivate somebody else who might be dogging it a little bit, you know, on the team? And, you know,
well, I mean, it's always good to have the carrot and the stick.
Right. So yeah, and me personally, like the psychological tug of war between confidence and being coached and being, you know, and players and you know, just letting guys go. Like, to me, in sports, that's the sport. You know, like I like to say, you know, a lot of people, you know, in our business like the stories. But I like the sports, you know, I like the intrigue. Like, some people can watch poker and you feel the intensity, you know, and some people are like, are you really just watching cards go around? It's like, no, there's so much emotion on the chips.
Vibes.
And yeah. Like, yeah, I'm just a big guy into the psychology of getting a team to play, you know, at high levels.
Well, body language, you like to watch the body language. I'm big on body language. I watch that. And, my great lesson was, and we got about a minute till we got to take a break, but Nikki's back. Nikki V is back.
Hey, fellas. Happy Valentine's Day to you.
Happy Valentine's Day to you. My great lesson about body language was working in the NBA. And if you work for some bad teams, and particularly an expansion team, guys, really a bunch of good guys, but we were an expansion team down in Charlotte. And, man, once you start losing,
right.
Marcus, once you start losing – and guys are getting paid, and they know they're going to get paid. That body language, man, when it comes to timeouts and warm-ups and the body language. So I was watching that.
Let me ask you this. Is body language more important for the actual player or the teammates around him? Because, you know, the two schools of thought of motion creates emotion. So I tell you to fix your body language so you'll carry yourself better. You know, it's kind of like one of those look good, feel good, play good. But sometimes – you know, the bad body language is worse for the other player who sees you with bad body language than it is for you to actually have the bad body language. Which side are you on as far as, you know, like, does it affect that player more than it does the team or the coach or the mood?
I think, again, it goes back to my three carry and two. If you got three guys that are into it, they're doing all they can do, and there's no bad body language, they'll pick the other two up and carry them along.
Mm.
Okay? I think they'll do that. And then if you've got strong guys at the top in those three, I think they bring the guys on the bench along. And I think it eliminates a lot of that. But if you've got three or four guys at the top, which four can carry one and three carry two, if any of those guys, if you lose them, if they become unfocused in the body language and their teammates see that,
yep.
I think they react negatively to it. I think it's really important that your key players are into good body language, happy campers, whatever you want to call it. Nikki, we need to take a break.
I was going to say, when you said 1 minute, I didn't want to jump right into any more.
Here you go. We got the Rolling Stones playing. So you guys now have 1 minute to wrap up starting now.
Well, we're going to talk some more basketball. I want you to talk about the Cardinals.
I can do that.
And
I know you can do that.
And then we'll talk a little bit about the top 10. I always make a top 10. I can't ever get Pops to sit down and do that, but he'll talk me through it. But the top 10, how you feel at the top five. And then I've got a team that I'm absolutely in love with. And I think people are starting to wake up to that team. But we'll be back. This is Fast Break Friday, ESPN Louisville 680, 105.7. Marcus Maben, Mike Pratt here.
Got ants inside the house, mosquitoes outside the house, moles burrowing in your lawn, and termites eating your house from inside out. You're completely surrounded! Luckily, OPC Pest Services has a Four Seasons program that can help. OPC has been providing quality pest services since 1972. Protect your home and property and call OPC Pest Services for a free estimate at 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com. Again, that's 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com.
With UPS, future you gets seriously pumped. As a package handler, you'll have a great job this season. Make up to $20 per hour after bonuses for a 25-hour work week. Future you goes further than you imagine. Find out what you'll become at upsjobs.com.